sounds naive now, 10, 15 years later, to say it that way, but honestly, that's what they believed. And in fact, the opposite happened. What you had was the denial of any meaningful existence that came from those, any meaningful expression of an indigenous existence that came from those people, and the imposition of a very constrained existence and an identity that was instrumental to continuing the capitalist process in that area, imposed on those people. So the judges, all the way from the lower courts to the Supreme Court, in essence, took what they needed from the input that was provided to them by the Wet'suwet'en and Gik'san peoples, and through their lawyers, through anthropologists, through their consultants, and in the end, through the Supreme Court justices sitting in Ottawa and their assistants, created an entirely fictive notion of what it is to be Aboriginal, and imposed that in law, which then gets imposed in policy and so forth, back on the Gik'san and the Wet'suwet'en peoples. And that process is repeating itself in Marshall decision, Mitchell, so forth. And this is just one example of a process in the state today. This happens in many different ways. And what is happening now is that people are starting to realize that just like the process of armed struggle has been delegitimated, just like the process of crass economic material enhancement has been delegitimated for thinking people, so is the process of legal activism, and so is the process of legal struggles. Now the question is, if we don't want to be citizens, if we don't want to be materialists, and if we don't want to be totalitarians, well, what is the path? What is the way forward? There still has to be a path from the existence that we live now to a different kind of existence. I won't point in a certain direction, up or down, or anything. I'll just say we need to transform our existence. And I think that word transformation is the key for me. So analyzing it this way, speaking to people all over the country, and also people in Mexico, and people that in every community I visited were respected for their integrity and the dedication they had to the struggle in whatever kind of way that they were taking the struggle to colonialism. Speaking to all these varied people who shared that common commitment to transform their community and their life, it came to me that, and I say it didn't come to me in some kind of mystical way, but it came to me in the sense that I was told so many times that I'd have to be really, really dumb to not get the point after speaking to so many people, that it's a process of regenerating ourselves, it's a process of transformation that is going to lead to our freedom from colonization. And this may strike some people as I use the word mystical, it may strike some people as spiritual, it may strike some people as kind of hearkening back to a religious kind of experience that people go through when they transcend something, to use those kind of words, transcendence, regeneration, and so forth. But, and I think there is elements of that type of process that need to happen in terms of understanding who we are and what we've become as a process, as a result of the history that we've lived as a community and as a people and as individuals. But I'm also applying it in a very political way, and in terms of being a social movement as well, is that when I say regenerative, what I'm saying is that we need to take the basic building blocks of an existence from the history, the culture, the languages, and the spiritual beliefs that we have as people, and remake them into something that is a path forward out of the colonized existence that we're living to a different kind of existence. It's to say that we should not take paths that have been laid out for us by one or other of the people inside of that problem of colonialism that I identified earlier. So whether it's the economic development person trying to empower us, whether it's the person who hates authority and wants to confront it physically with arms, or whether it's the person who believes in indigenous rights or Aboriginal rights and wants us to take part in that, we need to create our own path. That's basically what I'm saying. We need to create our own path, and thus far we haven't had any path laid out for us to pursue. And so it's a challenge that's laid out for, I want to say, our political leaders, but it's not really. It's a challenge for all of us to understand that in order to have any hope of reconstituting ourselves as nations, as healthy communities, as healthy humans, out of the colonial existence that we're living, we need to think about it in terms of regeneration, transformation, and then take from our traditions, our heritage, the philosophies that form a heritage of political knowledge, of spiritual practices, and so forth, build from that a movement that's capable of fundamentally challenging the colonial reality. And that's not to just challenge the land ownership system or not challenge the government system, but to challenge the reality of the way people live in a colonized existence and really recreate for ourselves the kind of existences that our ancestors, I presume, enjoyed. Now, we weren't around to know, but all signs are and all indicators are that they lived healthier lives than we live and happier lives than we live. And I think that's something that we can all agree on, whether we're Cree, Mohawk, Wet'suwet'en, or wherever we're from, or non-Indigenous living in this world here today. It's becoming apparent to anybody who sits and thinks about it for a while and looks inside that this kind of life that we're living is not healthy. It's not healthy spiritually, intellectually, and physically. And so how do we overcome that? I've been talking about that for the last, half an hour, 40 minutes now. And I guess where I leave it in the book is where I'll leave it here, which is that we need to put our minds together, and it's not for me as a theorist, and it's not for any one of our political leaders to lay out a model or an agenda or an ideology with a set of checkpoints and do this, this, and this, and you'll be happy. It's in essence saying that we all need to examine and overcome the effects of colonization in our own lives and recommit to building societies that are reflective of the values that our ancestors live. And that means challenging in just about every way the kind of lives that the state would have us live here today. And I think hopefully it sounds like it makes sense, but it's actually pretty radical when you think about it. Because it means living your life in a very conscious, resistance-oriented way every single day in everything you do. And it means questioning and challenging, and it means trying to reflect in every choice that you make and using a framework of decision-making and a worldview that is consciously created from this regenerated knowledge of being Indigenous than simply going along with any patterns that are laid out in front of us by the state. And that includes the way we're educated, the choices we make economically, the choices we make socially, culturally, and so forth. And so it's fundamentally radical, I think, but it's radical in a different way than in the way that any of those other paths would be radical. So it's not dressing in camouflage, carrying an AK-47, going to the jungles and attacking the nearest army outpost. I mean, everybody acknowledges that's radical, but in fact, it's not that radical, because by doing that, you're reinforcing the power of the state. It's not as radical as it may seem in comparison to, say, the lawyer who takes a fundamental case of land ownership against the state and all the way to the Supreme Court, and that person seems like a radical and so forth, but maybe not, because when you think about it, in taking that case to court, in pleading before the court, that person is reinforcing the power of the court to make that decision. And so what I'm talking about is questioning all of this and trying to reconstitute something that is authentic. And I know the word authentic is very contentious, and I'm using it consciously to try to create some sort of a discussion and some sort of debate and some sort of argument even around the idea of what it is to be Indigenous. Because that's really what it comes down to, is being Indigenous. It's not a matter of rights. It's not a matter of any kind of labels. It's how do we live our life? And it seems like that's what our teachings were all about. It was about living in a good way, living according to our teachings, which were not put forward as superior to any other cultures, but as simply ways that promote human happiness, balance, respect, and all of the values that people all over the world claim to share. And that's, I think, the essential message of the book. That's the essential message. I don't leave people hanging in terms of just saying that, and you know, everybody go and find their own path, but because I think there's a responsibility in trying to promote this type of awareness, there's a responsibility that comes with it in offering some sort of directions in ways that people can go forward and ways that people can come together to begin to talk about things and structure their activities, whether it's on a small group level or whether it's trying to reorient the way a community relates to other communities in the government and so forth. There's certain strategic and tactical knowledges that are out there. The experience of our peoples and the experience of peoples in other parts of the world has created some knowledge on how to successfully regenerate yourself and create the kind of social, political, and cultural space that would allow the kind of existence that we're talking about. And for example, the Zapatistas, I think, are in Mexico, the case of the Zapatistas, and I know they're one movement among many in Mexico. And they're even one indigenous movement among many indigenous movements in Mexico and in South America that I think have rethought the idea of what resistance is and have accomplished to a certain degree the kind of objectives that I'm advocating here. So throughout the book, I kind of reference the Zapatista case as not some sort of ideal, but a example of the type of resurgency and the type of courageous rethinking of what it is to be indigenous and then acting on that to create spaces of freedom, physical, social, and cultural, that I think we need to do here in North America, which is radically different than the type of accommodationist, assimilationist agenda that's being put forward as the solution to our problems by, unfortunately, the vast majority of our political leaders today. So I'll maybe leave it there, and hopefully we can have some discussion and talk about that.